The Children of the White Road. She was an awkward 15-year-old trying to find where she fit in. High school, she hoped, would be her last penitentiary. A thin, skittish freshman, some of her least favorite people likened her to a Holocaust survivor. Her fair skin easily became flush with the slightest reprimand. Her hair was shoulder-length, dirty blonde, and her aluminum blue eyes sat in sallow eye sockets, weary from too many nightmares and a family who believed she was inconsequential. She was quiet, easily wounded, and fair game for anyone who needed an excuse. She learned early in life to fear anyone who said they were only trying to help or protecting her from herself. Usually, they were neither. It was the last hour of the day, just one more class to endure until she would be allowed to slink onto the bus with a book and return to the safety of the forest and the river at the end of her street for a few hours alone before dinner. She spent the entire summer at the river, writing in her journal and escaping to the trees with her flute. The journal was her insurance in case her withered corpse was ever found. The authorities would at least have a direction to look. The flute was for her, a chance at pretending she was Shakespeare's Puck, master of all things make-believe, and the one everyone always loved and forgave in the end. As she sat in the auditorium, the house lights dim, a single spotlight illuminated the stage. She listened as her stagecraft teacher, a kind, soft-spoken man, explained to the class that there were at least 100 ways to get killed on the stage, but barring that, it was by far one of the most magical places on earth. Timidly, she took the tour around this new playground with the other students. Each stop was beyond her imagination's comprehension. The stage, where she heard the echo of 25 years of students who had walked these boards before her. The locking rail, where curtains and scenes flew until they were summoned to create dreams. The workroom, floors scattered with sawdust, walls splashed with paint, and the graffiti of lyrics and lines repeated in whispers by prompters in the dark. The dressing rooms, their ostentatious lights made her feel a little bit braver than she really was. Last on the tour were the light bridge and the catwalks, where shadows were cast and magicians hid, transforming make-believe into reality. With each new stop on the tour, she felt more in love with the theater. It was almost too good to be true, a place where she could actually be Puck, hide in plain sight, and maybe discover a little sliver of joy. She poured herself into this new space, nearly ignoring all but her AP English classes. She spent hours over months learning the tricks of light and shadow, the strength of wood and canvas, the flexibility of sound, how to transform paint and string into spaghetti, and paint and sawdust into moss. Yet through it all, she kept her head down, her voice quiet, and her footsteps timid. After her first show, she felt a little bit stronger, a little bit smarter, and a little less fearful, at least when she wasn't at home. Technical rehearsal for her second show was over. It was after midnight. She began the 3-mile walk to her house with lazy steps. Although her family rarely troubled themselves over her absence, she was in no hurry to get back there. Her father was a cruel man, exacting his revenge for the inconvenience of her presence with bamboo switches and leather belts. She was the scapegoat for her siblings, their get-out-of-jail-free card for any infraction they could redirect to her. Her mother ignored it all, never intervening lest she find herself at the narrow end of anger's funnel. The dog was her only ally, More than once she buried her tears in his fur, secreting them away from her father's detection. The animal was the only reason her journal was never discovered. It was spring. Warmth had returned to the air, and the moon cast a peaceful glow on the sidewalk and trees. The night was still. The road was empty of headlights, the grass empty of bugs. Silence wrapped around her like a blanket of preservation. Finally, she was at peace, but still so very lonely. She found a commonality with the misfits, unfinished scenes, each of them. Yet together, they performed the most tremendous stories. Even so, they were just distant buoys of friendship. They had saved her from a distance, tossing a lifeline when she needed it most, and she was grateful. But they were still only vague strangers. Lost in her thoughts, she hadn't noticed the car as it pulled up alongside, just a few feet behind, as she walked. Voices called out to her, but she ignored them, tucked her head, folded her arms across her chest, and kept walking. Flashes of the rape she knew was coming, had always been told she deserved, played out in her imagination. The car grew closer, and the voices grew louder. She concentrated on her memory of the river, the peace that washed over her when she was there, the last song from her flute, "Suicide is Painless," echoing in her ears. The voices grew louder, and in the next instant, she felt the strong arms of a young man gripping her shoulders and turning her toward him. She stared at her shoes. She understood the penalty for eye contact. "Jessica, stop!" His voice was familiar, calm, and kind. She looked up to see that it was Brandon, the student lighting director. He was a junior, and one of the first who went out of his way to offer her a safe welcome. She released the breath she held and nearly collapsed from relief. "Where are you going?" he asked, his voice genuine with concern. "Home, I guess," she responded with a whisper. "You can't. Didn't you hear? Tonight's initiation night." He smiled at her and looked back to three Jeep Wranglers filled with crew. They hung over the top of roll cages, their laughter fizzing like foam, and a can of Coke, shaken too many times. What? She was lost, confused, and flustered. "Just come with me. You'll see." Brandon led her to the first of the waiting cars and helped her climb in the front passenger seat. She sat in silence, trying to make herself as small as possible, while Brandon and the rest of the crew laughed, sang, and waved their arms through the open air as if they were on a roller coaster. A few minutes later, they arrived. Jessica immediately recognized the construction site for the new office plaza on the other side of the river. Before they broke ground, this was the field where she rode her horse on weekend afternoons. The company and town had been in a deadlock on some ordinance issues for nearly 2 years, and so the only part complete was the concrete access drive that ended in a cul-de-sac circle a quarter mile in. Brandon parked, walked around the Jeep, opened the door, and took Jessica's hand as the others tumbled out and began to walk to the center of the paved circle, laughing and singing all the way. "This is where we come after build sessions and rehearsals to hang out, party, chill. This is where we come to get away from our folks, the jocks at school, and anyone else who makes our lives difficult. Sometimes a few of the crew bring a guitar or two, and we put a few camp lanterns around. We just sing, dance, you know, whatever. Sometimes we read short stories, recite poetry, or run lines from shows. This is our safe place. You can't tell anyone." When Brandon and Jessica reached the center of the circle, the crew became quiet, their faces illuminated by the moonlight's glow. To Jessica, they looked like Shakespeare's sprites. Brandon scanned the crowd, drawing their attention in an instant. We know who you are, his voice purred, but you don't yet. So tonight, we're going to help you understand. Jessica looked at Brandon and then at the crowd of vacant faces around her. What? The old familiar fear welled up inside her again. She wanted to run, knew she should run, but her muscles felt numb as goosebumps rose on her arms in the night air. We've been watching you backstage. We've watched you learning all you can, helping wherever you can, and giving every ounce of energy to every job, even the worst, sorting the light gels. A rumble of laughter came from the crowd. Brandon quieted them again with just a look. Jessica shivered from the attention. You've shown us that this is truly where you belong. You're a theater nut, he said, holding his arms out, just like all of us. So tonight, we're making it official. He took the black t-shirt from one of the crew next to him and held it up above his head for everyone to see. Silkscreened on it was a yellow spotlight with white lettering in the beam. In unison, they cheered, "Light crew does it in the dark." Brandon turned the shirt around to show the back. The crowd chanted again, "We are the children of the White Road." Everyone cheered, laughed, and smothered Jessica with more hugs than she'd received in her 15 years on the planet. She laughed so hard, she cried. And when they dropped her off at home, a little past 3 in the morning, her ribs ached from the rolling laughter that she could not, would not contain. That was the night she discovered where she belonged. That was the night she learned what it meant to never be ignored, lonely, or afraid again.